The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right, welcome to a Thursday. We've made it this far, and it's a busy day, too. A lot has gone on, so we'll do an updated version of what's news coming up in a few minutes. You know, Donald Trump last night tweeted out that he was going to be on Fox and Fiends this morning. I didn't watch it because I can't physically make my television go there. I can't do it. My husband watches occasionally. He'll turn it on as comic relief, but I don't find it funny. I find it infuriating. So my hands physically can't make the television go onto that channel. Couldn't even tell you what channel it is. Just don't go there. But, oh, the wonders of the interwebs. Numerous clips were posted, and I couldn't help myself. I had to watch. I had to listen. And some of what this guy says is just unbelievable. I mean, the man lies with every ounce that's in him. He wouldn't know the truth if it bit him on the face. I know that's a weird metaphor, but it's what popped into my mind at the moment. Bear with me. I promise not to assault your ears too much, but I couldn't believe my ears. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. So, for instance, in this one, Donald Trump is asked by the Fox and Fiends hosts, I don't even know their names, to grade his first year in office. And of course, I mean, you and I know what we think of him, and the electorate does, just watch the results of the special elections that have been held so far. And the few primaries or the few elections that have been held since he took office, the American people are not too thrilled with Donald Trump, but he thinks he deserves an A+. I'm not kidding.
You've been in office over a year. Last year, you said in the first month, I give myself an A for effort and a C for messaging because you were having trouble, the White House was, explaining what you were doing. How would you grade yourself now?
Look, I'm fighting a battle against a horrible group of deep-seated people.
Deep-seated people
that
what?
Are coming up huh? with all sorts of phony charges against me, and they're not bringing up real charges against the other side.
Okay.
So we have a phony deal going on, and it's a cloud over my head, and
aww.
I've been able to do to really escape that cloud because the message now everyone knows it's a fix. Okay, it's a witch hunt, and they know that, and I've been able to message it. I would give myself an A+.
Of course,
nobody
you would.
Has done what right. I've been able to do, and I did it despite the fact that I have a phony yeah. cloud over my head that doesn't exist. It was what the Democrats used to try and make an excuse
what
for their
the
loss
hell
of an election, for their
about?
Loss
oh
of the electoral.
God.
College that they should never lose because the Electoral College is set up perfectly for the Democrats. And this was an absolute total beating in the Electoral College. They should
He's
never
still talking
lose
about
the Electoral
the
College. And they
oh
did.
My God.
And they swamped.
But does
and
it make you want to talk to Mueller and put an end to it? Does it make you want to talk to him? Because that's what Rudy Giuliani
is. The problem is that if you take a look, they're so conflicted. The people that are doing the investigation, you have 13 people that are Democrats.
Not true.
You have Hillary Clinton people. You have people that worked on Hillary Clinton's foundation. They're all, I don't mean Democrats. I mean like the real deal. And then you look at the phony Lisa Page and Strzok and the memos back and forth in the FBI. And by the way, you take a poll at the FBI. I love the FBI. The FBI loves me. But the top people in the FBI, headed by Comey, were crooked. You look at McCabe, where he takes $700,000 from somebody supporting Hillary Clinton. He takes $700,000 for his wife's campaign. And by the way, didn't even spend that money. They kept some of it because under that law, she took seven. He took $700,000 from a group headed by Terry McAuliffe, who was under investigation by McCabe and the FBI, and that investigation disappeared. He took $700,000. And you look
at the third time he said that, and it's not
true. It's a disgrace. And our Justice Department, which I try and stay away from, but at some point I won't.
Our
Justice Department should be looking at that kind of stuff, not the nonsense of collusion with Russia. There is no collusion with me and Russia. And
again,
everyone knows.
The question was, how do you grade your performance in your first year in office? I think Ronny Jackson has been giving the president some kind of something. He's a bit riled up this morning, don't you think? Wow. The man has come undone. Not that he was ever done to begin with, but there's something really off with him. 8 o'clock on a Thursday morning, the president of the United States has nothing better to do than to phone into Fox and Fiends. I don't get it. I just really don't get it. I'm not going to play you too much more. I'm going to play you one more clip, if you don't mind. And because he was asked about Michael Cohen, and this really sets him off, as if he wasn't set off enough before.
Yesterday, through his attorney, he's going to be taking the fifth. What's your reaction to that, being that you work with him for a couple of decades as your attorney?
He's a good person.
What's at stake for you, Mr. President?
Brian, you know Michael. Michael's been on your show, I'm sure, a lot. You know, Michael is a good person. Let me just tell you that Michael is in business. He's really a businessman, a fairly big business, as I understand it. I don't know his business.
No.
But this doesn't have to do with me. Michael is a businessman. Uh-huh. He's got a business. He also practices law. I would say probably the big thing is his business. And they're looking at something having to do with his business.
I
have nothing to do with his business. I can tell you, he's a good guy.
But isn't his business your attorney, Mr. President?
Well, I have many, many, just so you understand, I have many attorneys. I have attorneys, sadly, I have so many attorneys you wouldn't even believe it.
How much of your legal work was handled by Michael Cohen?
Well, as a percentage of my overall legal work, a tiny, tiny little fraction.
Really?
But Michael would represent me and represent me on some things. He represents me, like with this crazy Stormy Daniels deal, he represented me. And, from what I see, he did absolutely nothing wrong. There were no campaign funds going into
this. Then why is he pleading the fifth?
Would have been a problem. Because he's got other things. He's got businesses. And from what I understand, they're looking at his businesses. And I hope he's in great shape.
Yeah.
But he's got businesses, and his lawyers probably told him to do that. But I'm not involved, and I'm not involved. And I've been told I'm not involved.
Okay. Right.
He's only pleading the fifth when it comes to Stormy Daniels. So, and Donald Trump there said something. Said that Michael Cohen only represents a tiny fraction of his legal work. Well, if that's the case, then what does he need attorney-client privilege for? Huh? Just asking. Anyway, as I said, there's so much happened today that let's get right to what's news, shall we?
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Well, it happened. Mike Pompeo's nomination to be President Donald Trump's Secretary of State cleared a key Senate hurdle with confirmation. Confirmation came soon after. The 57-42 vote to end debate came after a handful of Democrats facing difficult reelection challenges joined Republicans in backing the CIA director, whose hawkish foreign policy views drew strong opposition from the left. The seven who voted with the Republicans are Heidi Heitkamp, Joe Manchin, Joe Donnelly, Doug Jones, Angus King, who's an independent from Maine who caucuses with the Democrats, Claire McCaskill, and Florida's Bill Nelson. Pompeo was sworn in by the Supreme Court Justice Samuel Alito soon after, so he is the new Secretary of State, and we are screwed. The Senate Judiciary Committee voted 14-7 to advance legislation that would protect Mueller after the panel's Republican chairman backed off from changes that threatened the bipartisan support for the bill. The committee voted to approve the bill, which would delay any action to fire a special counsel by 10 days and guarantee the ousted special counsel a chance to have three federal judges swiftly review the decision after the panel adopted an amendment from Chairman Charles Grassley of Iowa to require that Congress be notified 30 days in advance of any special counsel being terminated. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has said he would not bring the bill to the floor, but the bipartisan authors of the bill and Grassley have said they're working to change his mind. Bear in mind that even if McConnell were to bring it to the floor, which he said he won't, Trump would still have to sign it, which, yeah, there's a snowball's chance in hell of that. But at least they're moving it along, and there's some bipartisan action on this front, which is important. Bill Cosby is guilty on all three counts of felony second degree aggravated indecent assault. It only took two trials and, you know, 60 witnesses and 50 years, but Bill Cosby guilty. He's still out on bond while awaiting sentencing. I don't know why that happens, but, you know, justice in America. All right, and this happened. Rear Admiral Ronnie Jackson has withdrawn his nomination to lead the Department of Veteran Affairs amid damaging allegations that he created a toxic work environment, drunkenly wrecked a car, and maintained poor prescription records while serving in the federal government. In a statement, Jackson said, quote, "While I will forever be grateful for the trust and confidence President Trump has placed in me by giving me this opportunity, I am regretfully withdrawing my nomination to be Secretary for the Department of Veteran Affairs. The allegations against me are completely false and fabricated. If they had any merit, I would not have been selected, promoted, and entrusted to serve in such a sensitive and important role as physician to three presidents over the past 12 years." I gotta wonder how Obama never saw, or Bush for that matter, never saw some of the stuff that is alleged to have gone on under Dr. Jackson's tenure. It's the White House doctor. I don't know. In yesterday's White House press briefing, Sarah Sanders was asked about the vetting process for Jackson, which is kind of a joke.
Are you telling us that the White House was not aware of any of the allegations before the president decided to name Dr. Jackson, just first of all, to clarify?
I'm telling you that none of those things have come up in the four separate background investigations that have taken place. There's been no area of concern that was raised for Dr. Jackson specifically.
Can you describe to us then what the vetting process was at the White House before he was named? Given that, as Dave just mentioned, there is an Inspector General report and there have been allegations in the past that are now coming to light, but they existed before the president chose him?
Again, Dr. Jackson has undergone four separate background checks, one that was conducted by the FBI, and all of those revealed nothing and came back with a clean recommendation.
The only vetting that was done of him as a nominee was to look at his past background checks, is what you're telling us.
No, yes. There's a number of things, but you also have to remember this is somebody that spends more time with the president than just about anyone. These investigations are very thorough and certainly something that was taken into consideration.
Yeah, there was no additional vetting done. None whatsoever. As I mentioned earlier, Donald Trump's personal attorney, Michael Cohen, will invoke his Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination if called to testify in Stormy Daniels' lawsuit against the president. Keep in mind, this is the same president who, as a candidate, sneered, "If you're innocent, why are you taking the Fifth?" You remember.
When you have your staff taking the Fifth Amendment, taking the Fifth so they're not prosecuted.
Fifth Amendment, Fifth Amendment, Fifth Amendment. Horrible. Horrible. Her staffers taking the Fifth Amendment. How about that? But they have five people taking the Fifth Amendment, like you see on The Mob, right? You see The Mob takes the Fifth. If you're innocent, why are you taking the Fifth Amendment?
If you're innocent, why are you taking the Fifth Amendment? Which brings us to the other big legal development today, which is that Michael Cohen says, based on advice of counsel, this is in the Stormy Daniels case, I will assert my Fifth Amendment rights in connection with all proceedings, in this case, to the ongoing criminal investigation by the FBI and U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York.
Again, you know, fully going against what Trump said on Fox and Fiends this morning, Michael Cohen only said he'd take the Fifth in regards to the Stormy Daniels case. Just saying. Former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani, who just joined Trump's legal team to deal with the Russia investigation, met himself with special counsel Robert Mueller on Tuesday to talk about a potential presidential interview. Giuliani reportedly conveyed the ongoing resistance of Trump and his advisors to an interview with federal investigators, but didn't rule out the possibility. French President Emmanuel Macron spoke before a joint session of Congress on Wednesday and used the speech to slam Trump on climate change.
It's the meaning of our life, really. If we work and live destroying the planet while sacrificing the future of our children, what is the meaning of our life if our decision, our conscious decision, is to reduce the opportunities for our children or grandchildren? Yeah. By polluting the oceans, not mitigating CO2 emissions, and destroying our biodiversity, we are killing our planet. Let us face it, there is no planet B.
Such a great line from President Macron. There's no planet B.
And I'm sure one day the United States will come back and join the Paris Agreement. And I'm sure we can work together to fulfill with you the ambitions of the Global Compact on the environment.
The embattled EPA administrator, Macron later said he believes the White House will pull out of the Iran nuclear deal for domestic reasons, describing Washington's foreign policy U-turns as insane. Wait till he gets a load of our new Secretary of State if he wants to see insane. Embattled EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt, appearing before two House committees today dealing with his agency's budget, he attempted in the hearing this morning, he attempted to put the blame for his recent troubles on others. Politico reporting that, quote, Pruitt blamed his staff for the controversial purchase and installation of a $43,000 privacy booth in his office and said he would have stopped it if he knew the cost. I did have a phone call that came in of a sensitive nature, and I did not have access to secure communication. I gave direction to my staff to address that, and out of that came a $43,000 expenditure that I did not approve, he said. If I'd known about it, I would have refused it. Sure you would. Pruitt also admitted that he had authorized his chief of staff to award substantial raises to his key aides, but said he didn't know that the staffer planned to circumvent the White House to do it. This is a guy who keeps, you know, he's learning from his boss. He just lies. During a speech to bankers, White House budget officer Mick Mulvaney praised the influence of lobbying money, saying this.
We had a hierarchy in my office in Congress. If you were a lobbyist who never gave us money, I didn't talk to you. If you were a lobbyist who gave us money, I might talk to you. Now, what Mulvaney just publicly described looks a lot like the kind of pay-to-play or swampy politics that Donald Trump promised to end. If you're a Democrat, you might look at Mulvaney's comments or the president's personal business being enriched by taxpayer money or some in the president's cabinet who've engaged in questionable spending on private jets, dining room tables, bulletproof seat covers, or Capitol Hill flats and argue that Trump's Republican Party isn't living up to one of its core promises.
And I came up with this expression called drain the swamp, right? Drain the swamp.
I've been fighting to drain the swamp. And sometimes it may not look like it, but believe me, we are draining the swamp.
Bullshit.
We need to drain the swamp.
Drain the swamp.
Truly, we are draining the swamp.
Drain the swamp.
Drain the swamp.
Boy, what a great expression. It really is amazing.
I'm draining the swamp.
He wouldn't know how to drain the swamp if it bit him on the face. I don't know. You know, It's just inconceivable. Mick Mulvaney says, well, you know, we'd listen to lobbyists who gave us money. If you didn't give us money, we probably didn't listen to you. Admitting that they're down there in the swamp, and these are the people that he surrounds himself with. It is, you know, it's been a long time since we've ventured into opposite
worlds.
Everything
you thought you knew, you never knew it all. Sideways is straight ahead. Facts no longer matter. Reality is now fiction. There's a signpost up ahead. Your next stop, opposite world.
We are living in opposite world. All right. Well, Ronnie Jackson is history. Well, the question now is, does he remain as White House doctor? After all these allegations, I can't imagine that there won't be investigations into. They've had 23 people come forward alleging things like, you know, drinking on the job, crashing an official vehicle, handing out medication on the plane like candy, whether they be Ambien so you can sleep on a flight on Air Force One, or Provigil to wake you up. Should you, and it sounds like Trump is taking a whole lot more than Provigil this morning on Fox and Fiends. I don't know. He's on something. The whole thing surrounding Ronnie Jackson, you know, is just too weird. But before he rides off into the sunset, I figured a few minutes with Stephen Colbert on Ronnie Jackson couldn't hurt on a Thursday.
Dr. Ronnie Jackson. He's Trump's pick to lead the VA, but yesterday his confirmation hearing got rescheduled after rumors surfaced that Jackson overprescribed pills and drank on the job. And
yep.
Today we're learning some damaging new details. For instance, one trip during the Obama presidency, White House staff needed to reach Dr. Jackson for medical reasons and found him passed out in his hotel room after a night of drinking. So the staff members took the medical supplies they were looking for without him. And on an overseas trip in 2015, Jackson was intoxicated and banged on the hotel room door of a female employee. Now, we don't know the whole full story. Maybe he was just warning her that there was an aggressive drunk doctor outside her door.
That must be it.
And his drinking put people in danger. Once, at a Secret Service party, the doctor got intoxicated and wrecked a government vehicle. These are pretty scandalous revelations just in the last 24 hours, but honestly, we shouldn't be surprised. Would a sober man describe Trump's health this way?
It's called genetics. I don't know. It's some people have, you know, just great genes. You know, I told the president that if he had a healthier diet over the last 20 years, he might live to be 200 years old. I don't know. I mean, he has incredible genes. I just assume. I mean, you know, if I didn't watch what I ate, I wouldn't have in the cardiac.
Sounds like he's on something, doesn't it?
And anyway, Trump is 239 pounds and 100 feet tall, and his voice sounds like my childhood dog. And anybody else in here hot? Somebody get these spiders off me. Ah! And I hope he's okay.
Yeah, I hope he's okay.
And an inspector general's report in 2012 recommended that Jackson be removed from the White House because he and a rival physician exhibited unprofessional behaviors as they engaged in a power struggle over the White House medical unit. And there is nothing worse than having doctors fighting over you. I mean, a prostate exam is uncomfortable enough with just one hand up there. In a summary of the accusations against Jackson obtained by reporters, the doctor was described as toxic, abusive, volatile, prone to screaming tantrums, and the most unethical person I have ever worked with.
Wow.
To which Trump said, he reminds me of a young me. But I like him. I like this guy.
I like him.
Something about the cut of his jib, I don't know. But on the plus side, he handed out the pills, baby. Right, Montana Senator John Tester?
The word is that on overseas trips in particular, that Admiral would go down the aisleway of the airplane and say, all right, who wants to go to sleep?
Okay, but he's just following the Hippocratic Oath. First, do no harm. Second, who wants lewds?
Well, it was Ambien, to
Jackson
be fair.
Jackson apparently would hand out prescription drugs like they were candy. In fact, in the White House, they called him the Candy Man. Of course, that's just a nickname. His official title was Secretary of You Good? And just minutes before I came out here, even more damaging details emerged. Apparently, Jackson provided a large supply of Percocet to a White House military office staff member, throwing his staff into a panic when they could not account for the missing drugs. That's right. They were in a panic. And what's worse, there was no Percocet to take the edge off.
Oh, boy. It gets weirder and weirder how this guy keeps his job, let alone, of course, now he's out of the running to be VA secretary, thank God. But I can't imagine he stays on as White House doctor after this. But Trump's got his back. You know, Trump, that's his guy. Probably because he lied for him, 239 pounds my ass. All right, it is Thursday. Howie Klein will be here. There's a lot to talk about today, including what happened in Arizona on Tuesday. And the DCCC is up to their old tricks again, but this time there's hidden tape. Oh, yes. So we'll get to all that. But first, a look at the Green News Report with Brad and Desi.
It's Thursday, April 26, 2018.
Today is a red letter day. It's a banner day.
EPA chief launches sweeping overhaul restricting EPA's use of science.
Let us face it. There is no planet B.
French President Macron criticizes Trump's inaction on climate change. The vast majority of Americans prefer renewable energy to fossil fuels. Plus, global warming has transformed the Great Barrier Reef, potentially forever.
All of those forever transformations and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
I would argue that's the most useless, ineffective holiday since Arbor Day. And I'm sorry, Arbor Day, but your secretary's day for trees, and we all need to accept that.
Happy Arbor Day. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I'm afraid Arbor Day really is like Secretary's Day for trees. Looking it up on my calendar, it's not even listed. It was hard to figure out when the hell is Arbor Day.
But you did anyway. Hooray for trees.
Happy Arbor Day.
Well, first up, we have embattled Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Scott Pruitt, who this week proposed a sweeping new rule that would severely limit the types of scientific studies that the EPA can use in developing regulations. Pruitt's deceptive transparency rule would actually restrict the agency to only using studies where the underlying data is public. Now, while that sounds logical, in practice, it would conveniently block the EPA from relying on studies that use confidential patient medical records, the kind that have been used in landmark studies linking pollution and pesticide exposure to harmful health impacts.
Well, that's convenient for him, isn't it?
It is. In an interview with the broadcast, Mother Jones environment reporter Rebecca Lieber said that the rule could permanently weaken the EPA's ability to protect public health.
The EPA, if this rule goes forward and isn't stopped in courts, then they could look at this limited pool of studies and potentially to roll back these standards further and say that's what the science supports.
However, the proposed rule has a special loophole that allows the EPA to rely on industry-funded studies.
There is a generous carve-out for industry in this rule that essentially lets Pruitt personally to decide what gets exempted from this new requirement.
Oh. Did you get that? EPA Chief Pruitt can personally exempt certain studies as long as they're from industry. The proposed rule docket is now open for a 30-day public comment period at regulations.gov.
What is it?
Regulations.gov.
Got it.
Meanwhile, French President Emmanuel Macron in the U.S. for an official state visit contrasted his day of hugs and handshakes and backslaps with Donald Trump with a pointed address to a joint session of Congress in which he was highly critical of Trump's policies, including Trump's vow to withdraw from the global Paris Climate Agreement.
I believe in building a better future for our children, which requires offering them a planet that is still habitable in 25 years. Let us face it, there is no planet B. Let us work together in order to make our planet great again and create new jobs and new opportunities. And I am sure one day the United States will come back and join the Paris Agreement. And I'm sure we can work together to fulfill with you the ambitions of the Global Compact on the environment.
Well, after a day of hugs and kisses with Donald Trump, it's good to hear Macron tell Congress what's really on his mind.
Meanwhile, the impacts of climate change are transforming Australia's Great Barrier Reef. Coral reef scientists warn in a new survey that the world's most famous coral reef could be in irreversible decline after repeated bleaching events caused by surging ocean heat temperatures. Since 2016, several coral bleaching events in a row have killed off approximately half of the Great Barrier Reef, and increasing temperatures and ocean acidification are also killing other corals around the planet. Finally, a recent Gallup survey has found that in contrast to President Trump's policies, the vast majority of Americans continue to prioritize environmental protection, energy conservation, and developing renewable energy over increasing conventional fossil fuel energy production. Only 21% of Americans in the survey favored increasing oil, gas, and coal versus 60% who said the reverse. The survey found that 73% of Americans said they wanted the U.S. to focus on conservation and developing wind and solar energy more than they wanted to focus on producing more fossil fuels.
And where did you get the idea that this administration has any interest in what the American people think?
Good point.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. Happy Arbor Day.
I talk to the trees, but they don't listen.
This is a huge, huge issue.
And we're talking about it. The Nicole Sandler Show on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and French fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
If it's Thursday, it means it's Howie Klein Day. Howie of Down With Tyranny and, of course, the Blue America PAC, who finds and helps raise money for the best progressive candidates out there. Hi, Howie Klein.
Hi, Nicole. How you doing?
I'm doing okay for a Thursday. And you?
Good. I'm doing fine, too.
Good. Before we get into the story that we want to talk about, this with this secretly taped audio recording, I need to ask you about what happened Tuesday in Arizona. Not that it was a big secret. I mean, it was expected that the Republican would win in that special election to fill Trent Frank's seat. But once again, as you've been telling us, it's the swing to look at, and there was a pretty big swing in favor of the Democrats, wasn't there?
There was. And in fact, on Wednesday morning, everyone woke up, or if they stayed up late on Tuesday, thinking it was the Republican had won by 6 points. Mm-hmm. And now that all the votes have actually been counted and the absentee ballots and all that stuff, it's not even 5 points. It's four, I think 4.8 or something like that. So it's even worse for the Republicans than anyone thought. And on top of that, the Republicans spent $1.1 million. So this is money that the party and their allies put in above and beyond what the candidates put in. So the candidates raised about equal amount of money. So the Republic, on top of that, the Republicans put in slightly over $1 million in a district where normally Democrats don't even run. In 2006, in 2016, there was no Democrat running.
Wow.
In 2014, there was no Democrat running. Democrats don't even bother with this district. It's so red and so unlikely for a Democrat to win. And to keep the district, the Republicans put in slightly over $1 million. Do you know how much the Democratic Party put into the race?
Nothing.
Exactly right. Nothing. Zero. Nothing.
Right.
So if the Republicans are going to have to defend districts like this in November, they're going to go bankrupt, or they're going to bankrupt the Koch brothers or the oil industry. I mean, they no one can afford to take districts that are this red and spend over $1 million in them. It's be impossible. So they're fairly upset about the results. So, yes, they held on to the seat, but there are dozens and scores of districts that are far less Republican leaning and yet have Republican congresspeople who are now thinking, how am I going to win?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
So it was pretty good news for the Democrats. Even though they didn't win the district, the swing was humongous. And they realized that there are dozens and dozens of seats that they can now pick up. In fact, I noticed one of the big prognosticators in Washington, Sabato's crystal ball, came out today and took 10 very Republican seats that had been that they had rated as solid Republican and made them into, you know, one level down, which
oh,
is
really?
I think, you know, still Republican but not as solid,
right? Like lean Republican.
And in other cases, they took a few Republican seats and brought them down in their guesswork about who's going to win what. So there's a lot of bad news for the Republicans when it comes to the midterms in November.
Good. It's still not never a good idea to get too cocky and too overly confident because, you know, the Democrats are really good at snatching defeat from the jaws of victory, as we'll discuss in a moment. But it's looking really good. Now, what about the Senate side? Do you have any indication that the Democrats might be able to take back the Senate? I mean, it's such a tiny margin. All they need is like two seats.
Yes, and there's now four seats that are in play, four Republican seats that are in play. So first, let me just say that what the original appearance of this cycle was that there were so many Democrats running in states that Trump won, that the Republicans were drooling and looking forward to beating them in all these seats. Now, that can still happen, but it doesn't look like it is happening. So, for example, Claire McCaskill,
mm-hmm.
a conservative Democrat in Missouri, is ahead of the Republican, the likely Republican who'll be running against her. And there are a lot of districts, a lot of states like that. You know, Missouri was a very strong Trump state, but it doesn't look that they're going to defeat McCaskill. And all around the country, you're seeing the same thing. You're seeing these Democrats in red states looking like they're getting safer and safer. So the way it was supposed to come down is that the Republicans would sweep out all these red state Democrats. Now it looks like they're not going to sweep out any of them. So that's one thing. The next thing is that the Republicans thought that they wouldn't lose any of their seats, and now it looks like Nevada is becoming out of reach for them. Arizona. There are still three Republicans running, so they have a primary, but the polling that came out today showed the Democrat, likely Democrat, positive Democrat, really, Kyrsten Sinema, that she would beat any of the three and beat them not just by a point or two, but beat them by a considerable margin.
Wow.
So especially Arpaio, if he is the Republican nominee, which doesn't look likely, but if he is, she's going to just slaughter him. But she's doing really well against any of the Republicans. You know, she's terrible herself,
right,
but not as bad as any of them.
Right.
So that's two already that the Democrats look like they're going to win, Nevada and Arizona. Nevada is a purple state, so that's and Hillary won that state. But Arizona is you know, pretty red state. It's getting less red, but it is a pretty red state, and Obama won it. Now, there are two other states that nobody thought would be in play. Nobody, nobody, nobody. One of them is Texas, which isn't really a state that the DSCC, the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee, they didn't even get involved with this. This was just a young congressman himself making a decision. So there was no recruiting. Schumer didn't think that, you know, they should even bother. They said, you know, go ahead and run, leave us alone. We're not interested in this state. And no one thought he could win. It's now neck and neck, and a race that everyone thought Ted Cruz had in the bag.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not doing that well with fundraising, which is quite amazing. Beto O'Rourke is a congressman from El Paso. He's beating him in fundraising, and polling is showing a neck and neck race that can't be called. So that's incredible. I mean, no one thought that race would even be in play. In Tennessee, which is even a redder state than any of the other ones that I mentioned, mm-hmm. that's a really red Republican state. I mean, that's the kind of state where basically Democrats can win in the city of Nashville and in the city of Memphis and in the suburbs around those two cities, and that is it. They don't win anything else anywhere. So it's a really, really red state. And now every poll is showing former Governor Phil Bredesen, a Democrat, is going to beat Marsha Blackburn, a very, very right-wing Republican who decided to give up her safe House seat and run for the Senate, and now it doesn't look like she's going to win. It looks like Bredesen, a pretty conservative Democrat, but not a monster. When he was the governor, he did a lot of good things as well as a lot of, you know, things that a Republican would do. But overall, you know, when you're talking about a moderate, usually people mean a conservative.
Right.
In his case, he's an actual moderate. He wouldn't be a conservative. You know, today there was a vote on confirming Pompeo.
Yep.
And all the conservative Democrats in the Senate voted with the Republicans. And that includes, for example, Doug Jones,
yep.
who many people who listen to your show really decided they wanted to help, and people got all excited that we can. And you know, people still are to some extent. I mean, we took a very, very red state and replaced a Republican with a Democrat. But, of course, Doug Jones voted with the Republicans today, as did Claire McCaskill, who I just mentioned,
mm-hmm.
as did Heidi Heitkamp. And, you know, all these conservative Democrats voted with the Republicans today. So, you know, that's what you get when you elect conservative Democrats. If you wanted to see, you know, people fighting against Pompeo, then, you know, you're not going to get that from somebody like Phil Bredesen, if he's elected Kyrsten Sinema in Arizona. She's
right.
not going to be someone who's going to stand up and fight. She never does. Same thing in Nevada with Jackie Rosen. These are people who are going to go along on these kinds of nominations and vote with the Republicans. And you just have to decide, do you want the lesser of two evils or not? And if you don't want the lesser of two evils and you want somebody who's going to stand up and fight against nominations of people like, because remember, Trump is going to be in there for two more years.
Yep.
And if you want people who will support him, then you take the lesser of two evils and you vote for someone like Kyrsten Sinema and Jackie Rosen. Otherwise, you really want a Republican in there. That's what you have to decide, because the Republican is going to be bad 100% of the time. The Democrat is going to be bad some of the time and not bad other times.
Right.
So everyone has to make their own decision about this.
Yes. And there are those who say right now that, you know, to flip the Senate from a Republican, from Mitch McConnell being the leader to Chuck Schumer being the leader, in order to at least stop some of what Trump is up to, would be worth some of these lesser of two evils. But this
yes.
is where primaries.
Many people feel that way.
Right. But look, we've got Bill Nelson, this worthless senator from down here in Florida, who's in a race against Voldemort, Rick Scott. Well, I mean, two worse candidates I couldn't imagine if I had to name two. There's no question that between those two, yeah, you know, I'll hold my nose and vote for Bill Nelson. It's more a vote against Rick Scott.
Sure, but Bill Nelson was one of those people today who voted in favor of confirming Pompeo.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. As did Angus King of Maine, which I thought was a weird one. I didn't quite get that, but who knows?
He's an independent. Yeah. He's going to, you know, he's up for re-election.
Oh, he is up for re-election.
And he wants to show voters in Maine that he's independent. That's, uh-huh. that's the idea.
Yep, that's what it is. Okay, well, that paints a brighter light on the Senate races. Howie Klein, again, with us as he is on Thursdays. You have a great piece up.
I want to bring up one more thing before we go about the Senate. I mean, you mentioned that it's a fight also for the leadership of the Senate,
yeah.
and people might not understand what that means exactly, what it entails. And it really entails a lot more than the title of leader.
Mm-hmm.
Everything depends on who the leader is in terms of what gets voted on and what
That's
doesn't
right.
get voted on. I mean, it's not as bad as in the House, but it's real bad. I mean, McConnell will not allow things to be voted on that the Democrats want voted on. So, you know, that's how bad it is. And, you know, whatever you think of Schumer, and probably it isn't as much as bad as what I think of Schumer, at least Schumer will allow, you know, things from Bernie and Elizabeth Warren to get voted on.
Right.
They doesn't mean that they're going to win necessarily, but at least they'll have a chance.
Yes.
So that's a very important to remember. And it makes it worthwhile because, you know, under McConnell, there's not going to be any chance that any of this really progressive legislation that Bernie is coming up with, is going to even get a debate.
Right. Well, even today in the news, the Senate Judiciary Committee voted out legislation that would protect Mueller. But Mitch McConnell will not bring it to the floor.
Right.
So that's the kind of
and
thing.
Bernie is coming up with a bill for guaranteed income.
Mm.
And that's not going to pass in one session, but you have to start the debate somewhere. And that debate ain't going to get started if Mitch McConnell is the leader.
Exactly.
Period.
Exactly. Yeah, there are some saying that the Democrats should run more on Mitch McConnell the way the Republicans are running on Nancy Pelosi. Put him out there because, you know, Trump learned a new word, obstructionist. Well, Mitch McConnell is the chief obstructionist. That's what he did for 8 years of Obama. All he did was obstruct everything that Obama tried to do for the, I think, six of the 8 years that the Republicans controlled the Senate.
Yep. So, you know, it's important for people when they make their decision to keep in mind what it means for the Democrats to hold on to the Senate.
Definitely.
To have the leadership.
Yes.
And to decide who the committee chairmen are and who and what sort of legislation is going to get debated and what sort of legislation is going to be buried in the committees.
Yep. So it is worth looking at. And it's good to hear that there's a chance. Look, it's looking more and more likely that Democrats are going to take back the House, but that there's a chance that they could take back the Senate as well is that much better.
Yeah. I mean, I would never have said that in the beginning of this cycle. I would have said, come on, who do you think you're kidding?
Right.
And now I feel that there's a really good chance that the Democrats can win both houses back.
Which would be great. All right. I want to talk
only
about
one.
Yeah.
There's only one issue that's motivating people right now. I mean, not all people, but, you know, people are voting on Trump.
Yes.
That's what it is. And they don't like him.
For good reason.
Yes, for very good reason. And that for that reason, there is a very good chance that the Democrats are going to take back the Senate. Now, that's not because of them being good. It's just because people hate the Republicans. That's
right.
All it is.
Right. Well, people who listen regularly, Howie, have heard you talk about the DCCC and how they've been sabotaging some really good progressive candidates in the primaries. And this morning, up at downwithtyranny.com, you have a story about a story that's up at The Intercept about how Steny Hoyer is trying to get Levi Tilleman of Colorado to pull out of the race. We've talked about him before, but the difference now is what Levi Tilleman met with Steny Hoyer and set his phone to record their conversation, huh?
Well, it wasn't a phone. Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, he recorded the conversation and he gave it to Lee Fang, who's a really, really excellent investigative reporter and writes for the Internet now. I'm sorry, for the Intercept. And he wrote a story about it. Now, I had covered this months ago without the the whole story, but I didn't have the tape. Levi didn't know if he was going to release that tape, but he decided to do it. And it's quite mind blowing to actually hear Hoyer saying, telling him to get out of the race and saying we are going to make sure that the very conservative, corrupt Democrat that the DCCC is supporting, this guy named Jason Crow. I mean, people say to me, how do you know Jason is bad? Well, he was endorsed by the New Dems, and they don't just endorse anybody. They endorse bad people. Mm-hmm. And also, this guy has made his living by defending payday lenders. That's what he does with his time. He defends payday lenders. So you could pretty much guess what he's voting.
Yeah. Well, I've got the audio. You have it posted up at Down with Tyranny, but I have it here. So let's take the 3 minutes and play it, because it is stunning to listen to. You have to listen carefully. The louder voice is Levi Tilleman. The more quiet voice is Steny Hoyer, but you can hear him. So hear this.
Are we going to have time to talk after that?
Yes.
Or are we almost? Okay, good. Well, I want to say a couple of things when the recording is done.
No problem. All right, so let's listen to it now. Here we go.
Levi, I want to talk to you about this congressional race.
Absolutely, that's what I expected.
Yeah.
You would like me to get out of the race.
And you keep saying I would like me to get out. And of course, that's correct.
Yeah. I know you're fundraising for Crow.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm for Crow. I am for Crow because a judgment was made very early on. And it just made the decision.
So your position is a decision was made, very early on, before voters had a say. That's fine, because that's the DCCC knows better than the voters of the 6th Congressional District, and we should line up behind that candidate.
That's certainly the consequence of our decision. There are two things I'd like you to consider. One may be easier than the other. First would be, if you stay in the race,
mm-hmm.
frankly, I would hope you would not. I'll get to that. But if you stay in the race, it is not useful to the objective to tear down Crow.
Mm-hmm.
Crow's clearly the favorite. That doesn't mean you win. It just means he's the favorite.
I hear you.
That doesn't mean it's right. Just mean
no, I hear you.
Right. I don't know Crow well, but I think he's a decent human being.
So before we go any further on that, Crow is the favorite. In no small part, Congressman Hoyer, because the DCCC not only put its finger on the scale, but started jumping on the scale very early on. And I'm born and raised a Democrat. I mean, it's undemocratic to have a small elite select someone and then try to rig the primary against the other people running. And that is basically what's been happening.
I hear you, and I disagree.
But you were part of that process.
Absolutely.
As well. You
said
absolutely. Yes, yeah.
I've been at this a long time.
Yeah.
When I said you need to get in strong, hard, and early, you disagree with me. Obviously, that's your choice.
You guys are shoveling money at him.
I'm going to continue.
You're going to continue to do it?
We are going to continue to do it. And the reason why we're going to do it is because a decision was made to focus. It was clear that was our policy and our hope that we could early on try to come to an agreement on a candidate that we thought could win the judgment. And to give that candidate all the help we could give them so that we would have a unified effort going into a general election.
Which means, effectively, Congressman Hoyer, I'm running a campaign against Crow and against you and against the DCCC because you guys are on Crow's side.
Yeah. You know, frankly, that happens in life all the time.
Frankly, that happens in life all the time, he said. It was hard to hear Steny Hoyer.
It happens all the time in DCCC world, that's for sure.
That's right.
Literally all the time. I mean, I have a post going up tomorrow morning to talk about this again where I challenge Hoyer to a vote. I'm sorry, to a debate. And I suggested a one-question debate.
Uh-huh.
So it says the one question is, was this the only time over the last decade you personally did this to a progressive Democrat on behalf of a crooked right-of-center candidate? And Hoyer will never agree to this because he knows the answer, and he knows that I know the answer. And the answer goes back to 2006. In 2006, Hoyer and Rahm Emanuel was the head of the DCCC at the time. They knew very, very well that Mark Foley, who was then the congressman, a Florida congressman, that Mark Foley was going to be running. Mark Foley didn't know himself he wasn't going to be running. And the reason that Rahm Emanuel and Hoyer knew it, because they knew that he was molesting underage boys, the Page scandal. So they were waiting for the very last minute to announce that to the world. And the reason they were waiting for the last minute is because they didn't want the Republicans to be able to replace Foley.
Wow.
So they waited until the day, the exact day that the replacement process would have been over. And what they did was then made sure the press would break this news. Foley immediately that day said he wouldn't be running again. And Rahm Emanuel and Hoyer replaced a union teacher, a real Democrat. They replaced him with a guy who had just changed his party. So they replaced him with a wealthy Republican. The wealthy Republican, a guy named Mahoney, he'd been a Republican his whole life, and he was very wealthy, and he's just what the DCCC loved then and what they love now. That's the kind of candidate they wanted. And Hoyer did the same thing to the Democrat, a guy named Dave Lutrin. He did the same thing to Lutrin that he's trying to do to Democrats, all progressive Democrats all over the country. I mean, this is not just about Tillerman. Levi Tillerman is a good candidate. Blue America has endorsed him. Blue America had endorsed Dave Lutrin. These are good, solid Democrats. And the DCCC doesn't want them. They don't want union members. They don't want people who are working for a living. They want rich Republicans to run. What they think people want. And it's not what people want. I mean, what I said in my story today is there are districts all over the country, like Colorado 6, where Tillerman is running, where in the primary in 2016, Bernie won. Bernie won the primary. So doesn't that tell you what kind of a candidate the Democrats in that district want? They don't want a status quo candidate. They want a candidate who's willing to fight for change. That's why they voted for Bernie. That's
right.
Why they didn't vote for Hillary. And yet in comes Hoyer, in comes the DCCC, trying to chase out progressives who stand for what Bernie stood for and replace them with conservative candidates like Jason Crow. And it's not just in Colorado. They're doing that everywhere. You know the story of Laura Mosier in Texas 7 in Houston, Texas. That's the kind of thing they're doing everywhere in the country. They're doing the same thing here in California. And that is what Steny Hoyer has been doing for years and years and years and years. He keeps doing it. He doesn't get caught at it. People are now angry. I hear progressives crying, "Oh, how could that horrible Levi Tillerman tape that?" These are idiots. These are literally idiots, morons, saying something like that. And we'll have Hoyer do it for another 10 years? Is that the idea? Is that what they want? We need someone like Levi Tillerman willing to stand up and fight back. But how could someone do something so ugly as taping someone? Some woman who I know, actually, just sent out an email to a whole list group, and she's great. I love her. But she just doesn't understand. She doesn't get it. And she probably doesn't know that Hoyer has been doing this for over a decade.
Right.
Constantly doing it.
Wow. All right. Howie Klein, we're just about out of time. I'll post a link to the story. And there's an animation with the tape, captioning, so you can hear better what Steny said, because it's really despicable. And good for Levi Tillerman for recording it and letting it out there. Howie Klein, find him at downwithtyranny.com, and, of course, the Blue America Pack. Thank you, as always, Howie.
Take care. Bye-bye,
you
Nicole.
You too. Bye-bye. Okay. Yeah. Look, we want Democrats to win, but we want the best Democrats we can get, and this is why I always say primaries matter, because primaries matter. All right, with that, we'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening, everyone.